Okay, now we're back with the long-range picture of the advanced decline tees, and I put a couple of comments on the chart here to illustrate a couple of things. You notice at the top right, it says T13 is not a bearish type of T. People, I don't think they understand the terminology, but they'll write and they'll say, you know, this thing isn't acting well, and this T is bearish. Well, it's because it doesn't act well, and people are turning bearish as bearish T. But a bearish T is defined as in the right side of the T. The market makes a low that's underneath the center post low. So in order to be a bearish T, the market would have had to collapse a long time ago. And now, as we approach August 26, it would have had to already go under either the March 09, early March 09 low, or the late November low, because there's twin lows there. What they really mean is the T is weak. Okay, it's a bullish T that's weak. So there's two kind of terms that go with T's. This is a bullish T because it does have a sort of a rising pattern, and if you make a little recovery here in the next couple of weeks, then it'll go up. Then it's going to turn into a bearish trend. But since there's no T there, that's perfectly normal. Sometimes you can get bearish T's, which are called strong bearish T's. Which can actually pull you out very, very, very strongly in the final days, that last few weeks and so forth. They call that a strong bearish T. And we don't know whether the one in the volume oscillator chart, the previous chart, is either strong or it's sort of a weak bearish T. But it's definitely a bearish T because it did go below the center post low. It took out the lows at the center post of the T by using those rules. So I just passed that along, that it's not a bearish T, it's just a weak T. It's never going to be a strong T because it didn't take the market up to new highs. So it's a partial recovery, which is, in other words, to say it's a bear market rally, but still it's a rally. Okay, now Jeffrey has these questions about the what happens after T number four, which is the peak in August of 87 relative to the crash, and then you have all these T's formed. And so they say, well, you know, I don't understand T number five, the relationship of T number five is not really true. So this is how you answer that question. When Rich was, when I was sitting out and talking outside in my patio, he says, how do you account for the fact that why does T12 come out right? And all these other over a long-term distance. It's because the T can be thought of as a response in terms of the physical echo. If you set aside the cash buildup phase on the left side of the T, in which you can say that the projected top at T12 is really the peak in early 98 in the advanced decline line that has been echoed off the price bottom at the center post of the T, and then the echo of returns a new peak in the right end of the T. And the reason it has to be echoes, and the way you have to think about things if you want to solve these difficult problems, is that only echoes produce time symmetries. To take a simple example, if you're out in the western United States where you have a flat wall from a mesa or some other thing, it could be a reflector, and you stand out and you yell the word peak and throw your voice towards that wall, and it takes 1.5 seconds to reach that wall, it will come back in an equal amount of time, 1.3 seconds, and so the total round trip is 3 seconds exactly. And it has to be exactly because the transmission of a voice from through sound, it propagates whatever the propagation medium is, it's the same because it's a round trip. In radar it just goes faster, but it's always equal time, so you always know that the echo comes back in the same amount of time that the source takes to get to the target. In this case, what you have is a peak in the advanced decline line comes back as a peak. So if you shout peak, in 98, and it bounces off a low in 2002, so it's traveling for a very long period of time by some unknown way, and it comes back, and you get an echo, and it's a peak in the 07, it was mid-September of, calculated to be mid-September of 07, because it's coming through, it's whatever it's propagating through, it's coming back in the other direction, so it's the same amount of time. In this case here, you have to wait for the postmortem to be done to find out what is the nature of the recovery. It looks fine in the advanced decline line, but it's supposed to come back in a price, and that's the difference. The origin of the peak, which starts the process, is a peak in the advanced decline line, but it comes back as a peak in price. So what there is there's a transformation between the advanced decline line and the price. When the echo comes back, it's a different form of a peak, but it's still a peak. You send out a top and you come back with a top, but it transfers because the advanced decline line has nothing to do with the return echo. It's a peak in stock prices. Okay, so I discovered that, and so I only think of these as echo phenomena. Now, to go back to this question about the messiness of this problem zone and whether T number 5 is proper, or how do you construct T's on paper. Once people find out that it's a time symmetry involved, all they do is they sit on a simple computer program and they draw T's, and they make them time symmetrical, and then they come out with them, and they try to investigate that. And then they say, well, I don't like this T, I don't like that. I like this T, but I don't like this T, and something else. But it turns out it's just a physical phenomenon. Anytime you have a peak, and you have a perfectly regulated peak at the end of T number 4, which is the top in August of 87, you came up from the end of the year, and you went up to from the end of the previous year of 86, and then you dashed off, and you came up in this bottom zone. You had a pullback halfway up the right side of T number 4, then you had a peak, and then when you drop and you hit a low. I say down at the advanced decline line, it has big cash buildup, and I get, it says many echoes. What that is every time there's a peak disturbance that comes off that August 87 peak, and every time it hits a low, it causes an echo. And you have to be aware that it's not a question of whether you like it or not. It's just that every single one of those blows is going to throw an echo up. Fortunately, they don't all come back and hit you at one time unless the bottom phases are close together. So you get T number 5 because the time from the peak at the center of 04, it hits a low the low in the advanced decline line really comes on that second low, which is on December of 87. So you get a little bit of a length. You get a little bit of a length in the T, but it's so small that you've got problems with confusion of which low do you want to use, because as you go into 88, you've got a bunch of lows, and so there's probably more T's in there. Okay, because every time you hit a low, there's going to get you're going to get an echo out of it. And so every time you get a low in the advanced decline line, if you can go back in time and show that the advanced decline line is going downhill, you have to draw a bigger T. So when you finish T5, you have to go to T6 because it's still there. And then when you come back, it turns out the peak in the advanced decline line in 87, which occurred in March of 87, that was before the first dip in the bottom zone, you have to pick up the low at the end of 90 because it's a downside. So you have to get T number 7 as just another echo. You can't subtract any T that came out of a bottom, because if it's a physical thing, that is, it's a mechanical property of propagation, anytime a peak can hit a low, you have to have a T. And so you don't have any choices on. You just have to figure out what the rules are. But you can't make a T5 go away or say that you don't like it. You just have to compute it as an echo. And now, after you come out of T number 7, you can't do that anymore because now the advanced decline line is higher than the March 87 peak, and you have to be going downhill on the advanced decline line. You also don't want to, in the slightest way, ever tamper with the advanced decline line, because you have to be able to tell in the strict advanced decline line for all stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. Otherwise, the technique won't work. There are other ways to do this, which I'll get into in the next chart. But you do have to follow the rule that it is an echo, and therefore, anytime you can construct a peak, you have to come up with another T. You can see that there has to be a small T in the right side of T number 3, because you have a peak and you have a low in the latter part of 84. And you have to go through a T there, and you can draw these T's ad infinitum by just picking peaks and lows, and they're all there. The problem is that when you get into too many reflections going on at the same time, the problem becomes a three-body problem, and you can't really get that all the echoes that start arriving simultaneously, and you don't know how to add them up. Okay, in optics they have fringing effects, and you have this fringing effects going on in here too, because the way the echoes or the disturbances, which are then construed to be waves, reinforce each other or cancel each other out. But as far as drawing, if you're just drawing T's, every time you see a peak in the advanced decline line and you get another low, there's a T there, and it has to be there, and it has to be carried out. If you keep it simple, the T's will not combine in odd patterns. In other words, you see T5, and then you'll see the peak for T8 a long time later on from another echo, and the two echoes don't seem to get confused. So T5 is not really influenced by the impending T6 formation. So everything kind of sorts itself out. But if you go into it real deep, you can get into confusing issues, and the confusing issue is what do you do with the double bottom, because the two echoes are arriving at the same time. I just finally say that if you can get a pop in the rally up to August 26th, or say we call it the end of the month here, and you can get the market to break to the upside and then peel off that top, the nulled echo is the complicated one. And the nulled echo says that you'll go down for 3.5 months, because that's the spacing between the two. In that case, you will say that you go down for 3.5 months if you go off that. If it doesn't work out right here, or it's real weak, I'm not sure whether the 3.5 months shouldn't be coming from the April high, because I lose the ability to rely on the past examples, because the double bottom is supposed to make a double top. Okay, if you can come up with something that looks like a double top, then you can go with the nulled echo, because it's only when you get the double pop pattern formation that you're in the process of this mixing the two echoes together to come out with some kind of a coherent summation. And so you don't want to use the nulled echo, which is listed in the archives, unless you can see something that's on the upside. But you know, it's still possible that people will turn bullish in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and that would be that'll make one effect on the outcome thereafter. Okay, now if you accept the idea that there has to be an echo, you can now go on to the second chart, which I call the great 1987 great T. This chart here is a chart that came up once I decided that T's had echoes, were echo phenomena from prior peaks into valleys, into lows, and they're all tied and symmetrical. I realized that in this chart, which now we're looking at a momentum oscillator, but momentum oscillators are okay too. You don't have to use the advanced decline line. You have to use the momentum oscillator, but I always have to use a difference between two moving averages, one being twice as long as the other. In this case, it's 18 months and 9 months. See, at the bottom of the bottom, it says momentum oscillator 18 minus 9 month MAs. One dot is 1 month, so it's a 1 month calculation. The 9 months, of course, is if you convert that to days, that's 200-day moving average, which is very commonly used. And if you turn it 9 months into weeks, it's the 39-week moving average. So when people talk about the 200-day moving average, or they talk about the 39-week moving average, or the 200-day moving average, they're all talking about the same time scale. It's just you change it over. But when I did this, I knew that if it was true that you always had a a reflection from a low, and it worked in the oscillators too, because there's plenty of evidence for that. Then there has to be a big T center post in 87, because in 1987 the oscillator went off the bottom of the chart. And if you look back in time, you found out that there is a descending top peak from the peak in 75, which is coming. You get this big peak when you come out of 74. It's just like in the short-term oscillator coming out of the March 9th low. You have this huge spike up, and the oscillator peaks. It's not the greatest rally in the world at that stage, but on a change in momentum basis, because you're using two oscillators to take the difference, the oscillator will make a peak. So if you run that down, and it has to be a T, and it has to be an echo phenomenon, then there must be a top 12 and a half years after the 87 low, which is the mid-2000 peak. So I was able to deduce, just from the fact that there was an echo phenomenon at work, and that was the only place that the echo could be done, and it had to show up at oscillators that were 2-to-1 in time duration, that there had to be a mid-2000 peak. And that was important, because that means that the dot-com revolution was all is when everybody bought stocks and they didn't care whether they were good stocks or bad stocks, is the inverse symmetry of the 87 low, in which everybody sold stocks because, and they didn't care whether they were good stocks or bad stocks, they just sold them because they were frightened to death, okay? And then, so you get the inverse, okay, they will buy anything and they didn't care about the stocks because they're meshed in greed. And that's the symmetry that you see in the emotional props, in the emotional makeup of investors. So there's a symmetry going on in the psychological state that it's different than the time state. It is very very often you can reach out and you can find these. Well, I mentioned this one because it's an example of how you get from the idea that all T's are is echoes to this is an echo and it should be big, because I can now do it in the next charts to do it in the bonds, where you get washes out in the psychology, and we'll get to that to the next phase. But it's all based on the fact that it's just a bunch of echoes. So you draw this T because you have to have this T here. Once you set the oscillators up, there's no other way that this T cannot exist. And if the T can exist and it is an echo, the result will always occur. And that's where you get the idea that they're going to go into a speculative surge, not caring about anything else, just as the opposition to the severity of the low. Okay, so we're going to take that, and then we're going to go back and go into the next stage, and come up with the things that I talked with Rich about relative to big T's, and the fact that the bigger they get, you know, the more interesting they get, because this T is a very big T, and it does make a big speculation at the end. So, you know, bigness has this it is very interesting in the sense that you can get very forceful moves, and that they tend to be extraordinarily profitable. Okay, so we'll close this section down. We'll be back in the next segment.